Without Borders says Israel is deliberately and systematically destroying Gaza's healthcare system amid its genocidal war on the territory. A new report says the US has approved the transfer of thousands of additional bombs to Israel despite the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza. And the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement says the US is complicit in Israel's Gaza genocide and shares its criminal intention to exterminate Palestinians. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has held prayers of the bodies of the seven Iranian military advisers killed in Israel's Monday attack on Iran's embassy in Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei prayed over the bodies after meeting with the families of the martyrs. The bodies arrived in Tehran from Syria's capital earlier on Thursday. The official funeral ceremony will be held on Friday, which coincides with International Quds Day. The Israeli attack killed two senior Iranian military commanders and five accompanying officers who were on an advisory mission to Syria. 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip and the regime's relentless attacks continue to leave a trail of death and destruction across the territory. Dozens of civilians have lost their lives after Israel's air raids and artillery fire targeted their homes and gatherings of displaced people. Airstrikes in Beit Hanun in North Gaza have killed a paramedic and left three others injured. In central Gaza, Israel's bombings in the city of Deir al-Balah killed two people. Additionally, two civilians were killed and several others injured in an airstrike on the Nusayrat camp. In the south, Israel's artillery targeted the vicinity of Nasser and Al-Amal hospitals, injuring a number of civilians. Four Palestinians, including two infants, were killed in an attack on a house west of Rafah. The Palestinian Health Ministry says the regime's forces killed 62 people and injured 91 others in a matter of just 24 hours. The death toll from the Israeli genocide now tops 33,000, with over 75,600 injured. The United States has approved the transfer of thousands of additional bombs to Israel as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war in Gaza. A new report citing a Biden administration official says the package, which was approved this week, includes over 2,000 unguided and 1,000 small diameter bombs. According to the report, the munitions will come from previously authorized supplies and are not slated for delivery before 2025. Last month, the U.S. State Department authorized the transfer of billions of dollars in bombs and fighter jets to Israel. Reports say Washington has quietly made more than 100 weapon sales to Tel Aviv since the regime's onslaught on Gaza began early last October. The arms supplies fly in the face of the U.S. call for a ceasefire in Gaza and amid increasing international outcry over Israel's heinous crimes across the territory. The head of the charity organization Doctors Without Borders has slammed the Israeli regime for the quote deliberate attack on aid workers. Christopher Lockyer was referring to an Israeli strike on Monday that killed seven international aid workers associated with a US-based charity, World Central Kitchen, in the Gaza Strip. Let's take a listen.
Humanitarian workers are protected. No ifs, no buts. We do not accept the narrative of regrettable incidents. We do not accept it because what has happened to World Central Kitchen and MSF's convoys and shelters is part of the same pattern of deliberate attacks on humanitarians, health workers, journalists, UN personnel, schools and homes. This is not just about implementing an effective deconfliction mechanism. Our movements and locations are shared, coordinated and identified already. This is about impunity, a total disregard for the laws of war. And now it must become about accountability. It not only shows the failure of deconfliction measures, it shows the futility of these measures in a war fought with no rules. That these attacks on humanitarian workers are allowed to happen is a political choice. Israel faces no political cost. Instead, its allies enable this brutality with impunity and provide even more weapons that maim and kill civilians indiscriminately.
International medical charity Doctors Without Borders has accused Israel of deliberately and systematically destroying Gaza's healthcare system. A senior MSF official said the deadly attacks on medical and humanitarian staff indicate either Israel's deliberate intent to destroy the territory's health sector or its reckless incompetence. Amber Alayan added that Gaza's hospitals are grappling with levels of carnage on a daily basis that no healthcare system in the world can cope with. She said the vast majority of injuries in Gaza are explosive injuries caused by the regime's bombardment of homes. She emphasized that no amount of field hospitals can replace the healthcare system that existed in Gaza before the Israeli onslaught. Major international aid groups have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They say countries that are arming Israel are also obliged under international law to protect people from the regime's, quote, atrocity crimes. The aid groups, including Oxfam and Save the Children, also slammed the Israeli regime for restricting aid delivery into Gaza, saying it's now almost impossible to work in the besieged territory. Meanwhile, the president of the medical charity Doctors Without Borders blasted the West for arming Israel. Isabel De Forney said the US, Britain and France are complicit in what is going on in Gaza, which amounts to genocide. She said Israel is waging war on an entire population which is trapped, deprived of food and massively bombed. She added that Gaza is progressively being made unfit for human life and has passed the threshold of absolute horror. Author and journalist Robert Fantina believes that Israel does not want a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli government doesn't want a ceasefire agreement of any kind because that would prevent them from slaughtering the rest of the population of Gaza and being able to annex the Gaza Strip, which is what they want to do. They will continue to annihilate the people there, to destroy the infrastructure, all under the myth of protecting themselves from what they refer to as an existential threat. It is Palestine, not Israel, that is facing an existential threat. But that's exactly why the Israeli government will not move towards a ceasefire, because they want to end Palestine, and a major step in doing that is annexing Gaza. And in order to do that, they have to destroy the people of Gaza or drive them out into Egypt, into refugee camps, as was done 75 years ago. And most of those people have been unable to return, despite the international guarantee that they can. But Israel has never been a reasonable partner in so-called negotiations, which are ridiculous. And it's not a reasonable partner now in looking for a ceasefire, because a ceasefire is not its goal. Israel knows that whatever it wants to do, the United States will back it financially and diplomatically and militarily. This is a policy of the United States that has been ongoing for decades that makes no sense. The United States is coming down again on the wrong side of history and will be associated with genocide for decades and decades to come.
Yemen's Ansarullah leader says the United States is complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza by providing the regime with weapons, expertise and intelligence. Speaking in a televised speech on the eve of the International Quds Day, Abdul Malak al-Houthi said U.S.'s uninterrupted arms shipments to Israel have exposed its hypocrisy on Gaza. He added that Washington shares the regime's criminal intention to kill off Palestinians. Houthi said Israel has received the largest American military aid since World War II. He also slammed certain Arab states for their failure to support Palestinians and their cooperation with Israel. Without naming such states, he said some of them are even complicit in Israeli crimes by providing aid and goods to the regime. Al-Houthi also called on Yemenis to pour into the streets in their millions to mark this year's Quds Day on Friday. He emphasized that Yemen's stance on supporting the Palestinian people will never change. A senior Hamas representative in Lebanon has slammed Israeli atrocities in the Gaza Strip, calling on Palestinians to escalate the acts of resistance against the regime.
A proof of the unity and cohesion of our people around the option of resistance as a only legitimate means for liberation and return. And we call for this to continue and to further escalate this resistance against the enemy and against the settlers. the blatant crime committed by the Zionist enemy against the Al-Shifa medical compound and the medical teams and the unarmed civilians and ill and those who were with them and the displaced in the hospital and in the surroundings of the hospital over a period of 2 weeks will continue to witness the brutality and savagery of this enemy.
Osama Hamdan said in a press conference that all plans of the enemy against Gaza will be destroyed in the face of Palestinian resistance. He also mentioned the Israeli attack on charity workers in Gaza, saying that the strike shows the depth of Israel's brutality as the regime keeps violating all international laws and norms. The senior Hamas official condemned the continued U.S. support for Israel, saying that Washington is responsible for Tel Aviv's crimes against Palestinians. On the notion of talks for a possible ceasefire, he stressed that any deal must lead to an end to the onslaught on Gaza and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the territory. Speaking on the eve of the International Quds Day, Hamdan called for worldwide rallies in solidarity with the Palestinian people. International Quds Day is an annual pro-Palestinian event held on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. The day was designated by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, in 1979 in solidarity with Palestinians. People worldwide would mark this year's Quds Day on the coming Friday. Our correspondent Robert Inklelish in Calgary, Canada, has asked some citizens about the event and its importance in the Muslim world. Let's take a listen.
I think it's all about uniting the people, whether that's within the Middle East or within the West. Society at this time kind of has us all working against each other. And if we can unite and get the people together, we can make it known that this is a humanitarian crisis that we're not okay with.
I think it's important that we protest because it just tells the Palestinian people that we're here for them and also puts pressure on our governments. Since this all started, we've all been boycotting and signing petitions to try to stop this war and this madness. But protesting really gets our boots on the ground and visualizes how many people actually care about this movement. And it's in the millions, you know, all over the world. We've seen protests that have ranked over 500,000. And there's no stopping us now, really. We're just trying to fight the good fight and hope this all comes to an end very soon.
I think it's important to protest because we need to show Palestinians that there's people all around the world that supports them.
Well, I think it's important to show solidarity with the Palestinians. They've been fighting the fight for so long, and I think now there's a movement that helps. I think people are more allowed to speak their voices now, and it's important to show up to these protests to stand with Palestinians and show them that they're seen and heard and that their feelings surrounding the whole thing are valid because they've been invalidated for so long. So, yeah, we need to come and shout the slogans and release all the frustration that we have based around these issues.
Our correspondent in Nigeria, Donjuma Abdullahi, has asked some citizens about the International Quds Day and its importance in the Muslim world.
I think we should appreciate Ayatollah for that bold step in reminding the world of the atrocities that have been committed on these people. Forget about the religion which they are. We are first and foremost human beings. Humanity comes first.
Islam is peaceful. Islam is justice, and Islam believes in equality. So there is need for the entire world to come to the aid of Palestinians so that this war on Gaza should stop in totally.
The significance is to highlight the whole world, to tell the whole world or to lay off a foundation on how to uproot this illegal entity. This apartheid state called Israel.
There is every need for the world to come together and look into the issue of Gaza so that it will not escalate to a level of beyond control. Children are dying. Sick people in the hospitals are becoming victims. A humanitarian activities becoming impossible.
It's anti-human for you to see children, women die and being killed, and all the big structures being destroyed. And we are just part of humanity. I think all perpetrators, all stakeholders should take this so seriously that we should do something about the plight of the Palestinians by bringing succor to that environment.
On the eve of the International Quds Day, Iran once again calls for a referendum in the occupied Palestinian territories to resolve the century-old issue of the region. In a statement published online, Iran's foreign minister said Tehran believes that the Palestinian question should be resolved through a referendum amongst all original inhabitants of Palestine that includes Christians, Muslims and Jews. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said lasting peace in the region can only be achieved by addressing the root causes of the problem. He noted that Al-Aqsa flood operation was in response to Israel's 75 years of occupation and the continuous crimes against Palestinians. Iran's top diplomat urged the international community and Muslim states to take practical steps to end the Israeli crimes. He also blamed the U.S. for the continuation of the war on Gaza and the obstruction of efforts to end it. Anti-NATO sentiment in Italy keeps growing as the military organization has marked its 75th anniversary. Many in Italy fear that NATO's aggressive posture could escalate the Ukraine conflict into a full-scale war in Europe. Here's more.
Thursday marked 75 years since NATO's founding. Italy has been a NATO member since 1949, the year the North Atlantic Treaty was signed, practically since it became a republic after World War II. On Thursday, a protest was held in Rome in the surroundings of the highly strategic NATO Interforce Summit Operational Command. Protesters said NATO is no longer needed since the USSR was dissolved, adding that the US-led military organization has profoundly changed its nature over the years.
NATO's 1999 adoption of a new strategic concept changed everything. The new concept also included the safeguard of political and economic interests and the possibility to act in conflict management and crisis response operations, including those beyond alliance territory. That's when NATO was turned into an offensive organization, a world policeman.
Since the end of World War II, Italy has become the home of more than 120 NATO and American bases. Some are well known, while others are secretly positioned across Italian territory. Italy is the European country with most US and NATO military bases on its soil, followed by Germany and Great Britain. The largest portion of Italian territory that is under NATO military servitude is on the island of Sardinia, where for decades. Later on Thursday, Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani reiterated that Rome is not going to send its troops to Ukraine, hinting at the possibility of resuming relations with Russia in the future. Max Civili, Rome.
There you have it, those were the top stories. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye.
Human values are alien to the Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini. Everybody together, unanimously, with one voice, present at the glorious demonstration of God's Day.
World Oats Day in the heat of Gaza war.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. World Oats Day of 2024 arrives while 6 months have passed since the start of Al-Aqsa storm in Gaza. This astounding operation has yielded very important outcomes for the region, as it has surely accelerated the end of the cancerous tumor of Israel to result in a very bright future for the region and the world at large. The 7th of October 2023 will last forever in the history of West Asia. On that day, the combatants of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, attacking the Zionist regime, imposed the greatest defeat on Israel since its illegitimate birth in 1948. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called it as an irreparable defeat, saying that Israel, after the operation, would be different from the Israel before. The fabricated Zionist regime, after this disgraceful defeat, which shook the regime to its foundations, launched bestial attacks on the people of Gaza, leading to over 33,000 martyrs and 76,000 injured, most of whom are women and children. Now, 6 months after the outbreak of war, what are the achievements of Al-Aqsa Storm? Please stay tuned for the first part of the two-part special feature on the World Oats Day to review these achievements. The most important achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm is to shatter the myth of invincibility of the Zionist regime army. This fake regime, through worldwide propaganda supported by the Western media, has sold to the world public opinion that Israel has the most powerful army in West Asia and one of the most powerful armies in the world. This media deception has continued for over 7 decades. Al-Aqsa Storm not only shattered this myth, but also it was a very big scandal for the Zionist regime's intelligence and security system, which used to boast of detecting any move against the regime. More than 1,500 Zionist forces were killed in Al-Aqsa Storm, and 550 others have also been killed for the past 6 months. The Israeli intelligence and surveillance organizations failed to monitor and detect this great operation, which had been designed several months earlier. Furthermore, these organizations have failed to find a place of keeping their captives by Hamas after 6 months, and that in a 300,000-kilometer area. Elijah Majnir, analyst of international military issues with the Egyptian daily Al-Misr Al-Yaum, said that the evaluation of the developments in the battlefront proves the military defeat of the Israeli regime in the war against Palestine. He adds that, since Israel has not reached the goals such as liberation of its captives, defeating of Hamas, and prevention of attacks on the settlements, it can be said that Israel has been defeated. Another achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm is the great victory of Hamas, as the Zionist regime had promised to defeat it and liberate its prisoners, neither of which have materialized. Meanwhile, despite Israeli genocide in Gaza and the heavy propaganda against Hamas in the world media, opinion polls show that more than 70% of the people of Gaza continue supporting Hamas and Al-Aqsa Storm. This has been confirmed even by the Secularist Political Research Center close to the Self-Rule Authority of Palestine. This poll indicates that 71% of Palestinians have announced their satisfaction with Al-Aqsa Storm. Hamas achieved this victory while war with the Zionist regime is an asymmetric war, hence, beyond classical military standards. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said to the visiting head of Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, that what caused the failure of the Zionist regime in attaining its military goals was the historical patience of the people of Gaza in the face of the Zionist regime's crimes and savagery. Another important achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm and 6 months of the Zionist regime's war against Gaza is that it destroyed the view that the Palestinian issue has ended. Al-Aqsa Storm turned Palestine to the most important global issue. For the recent years, particularly with the betrayal of some of the reactionary Arab regimes to normalize ties with Israel, the Palestinian issue was going to the margin and had almost lost its prominence as the priority of the Islamic world. Today, Palestine is a top issue of not just Islamic world, but the whole world. That's why today it is very ordinary to see demonstrations in France, Germany, Britain, Australia, and the US with hundreds of thousands of people pouring to the streets to demand for the rights of innocent people of Gaza and ending of the ongoing Israeli genocide in the region. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, said to Ismail Haniyeh that the patience and the steadfastness of the people in Gaza is a grand phenomenon which has really dignified Islam and, in spite of the enemy's intention, has turned the issue of Palestine into their first world issue. Al-Aqsa Storm and 6 months of the Israeli war against Gaza have deepened and highlighted internal differences in the occupied territories. These differences have been there for the past years too. 5 parliamentary elections were held in 4 years, between 2019 to 2023, but Netanyahu's cabinet was set up with the collaboration of extremists. The war in Gaza has further revealed the extremist nature of Netanyahu's warmongering cabinet in the occupied territories. The recent trip of Benny Gantz of war cabinet to the US and Britain was an indicative of internal differences in the Israeli entity. He has turned into the main option of premiership after Netanyahu and Joe Biden administration and the European allies of Israel are very much interested in his coming to power. In reaction to his sudden trips, Benjamin Netanyahu tried to prevent appropriation of government facilities for Gantz and cooperation of the Zionist regime embassies in the US and Britain with him. This was done to show that Israel has a prime minister. However, the latest internal difference inside the Israeli cabinet is related to Gideon Moshe Sar. Sar, who was justice minister between 2021 to 2022, has announced to step down from the cabinet. The move prophesizes the disintegration of the shaky warmongering cabinet. The solidarity and coherence of the axis of resistance was another great achievement of Al-Aqsa Storm and the Israeli war against Gaza. The players of resistance have, on the one hand, tried to prevent the expansion of war in the region, and on the other hand, they have taken important measures in support for Gaza. The Lebanese anti-terrorist movement Hezbollah and the valorous Yemeni Ansarullah are 2 important players of the axis of resistance which have officially entered the war against the Zionist regime. This shows that resistance has not geographical boundary. Ayatollah Khamenei said in his speech on the first day of the Iranian New Year, "The resistance front has unveiled its true situation. Perhaps neither the Americans nor the Westerners nor the regional governments didn't know the power of the resistance and the ability of the resistance in the region as it really existed and exists. But now they have realized. Al-Aqsa Storm has also proved the defeat of the US. The United States has stood by the Zionist regime since the very start of the war on October 7, 2023, as it has called it the Israeli genocide as legitimate defense. The US President Joe Biden traveled to the occupied territories a little after the outbreak of war, but his State Secretary Antony Blinken has traveled 7 times to the region during the past 6 months. These trips, on the one hand, meant the U.S. full support for and complicity with the Zionist regime in its unprecedented crimes in Gaza. On the other hand, however, these trips laid bare the differences between the two comrades in crime. The U.S. had 3 times vetoed the U.N. Security Council resolutions for ceasefire in Gaza. This was an ethical scandal for the U.S. government. The latest resolution, which was faced with the neutral vote of the American member of the UNSC, not only had not mentioned the name of Hamas, but also had called for halting a war in Gaza. And the climate in the UNSC session was clearly anti-Israel and anti-US. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said in his speech in the beginning of the new Iranian year, America adopted the worst possible condition in the issue of Gaza. America chose the worst possible condition in Gaza region. It did something that made it hated in the whole world. These people who demonstrate in the streets of London, Paris, and other European countries, and America itself in favor of Palestine, are indeed announcing hatred towards America. America has become hated in the world. It was hated in the region. It has become 10 times more hated.
Killings of journalists.
Part 1.
Being a journalist, regardless of nationality, is a job that is full of dangers and obstacles. It is also the job of truth seekers. The Palestinian journalist is destined to live within the walls of these violations. But despite these hard conditions, he or she still has determination, boldness, persistence, and strength.
The reality is that Palestinian journalists have a double suffering. On one hand, they are part of the Palestinian people who are subject to crimes and violations that qualify to genocide and war crimes. On the other hand, they have a dangerous job, especially in this hard environment under which Palestinians live because of the occupation. The Gaza Strip is besieged, while in the West Bank there is the apartheid wall, settlements, Judaization of Jerusalem, frequent violations and arrests. This affects the entire Palestinian society, and especially the journalists, as the occupation wants to black out the truth and their violations of human rights, as well as the state terrorism it practices. The Israeli occupation practiced all sorts of humiliation and subjugation methods on journalists. But along the years, the Palestinian journalist refused becoming a tool in the hands of the occupation and Israeli intelligence. And this made journalists sacrifice a lot. The Palestinian journalist, plays a role as significant as that of the Palestinian politician or the fighter. To each his role. We have always seen the Palestinian journalist in the field. He would use his cameras and other tools to perform heroic and honorable achievements. He would always document and publicize the suffering of the Palestinian people, especially in the besieged Gaza Strip. He would always show the world the suffering, the incursions, the killing and torture Palestinians suffer on the hands of the Israeli occupation.
This boldness made the Israeli occupation army not differentiate between a journalist and another. So, everyone is targeted and everyone is wanted.
Regardless of their nationality, journalists pursue finding the truth, removing injustice, and unveiling crimes of the occupation, no matter who that occupation may be. We have seen examples for that where reporters for networks in the United States and Europe expose crimes committed by the U.S. and other countries. An exception to this is the few journalists who are affiliated with their government, no matter who that government may be. Such journalists have a questionable credibility and are renounced in their communities. Journalists who come to Palestine are our colleagues and friends. We have to help them, and the Israeli occupation has to respect their freedom of movement and work, like it respects our freedom. But unfortunately, the Israeli occupation, as you know, does not respect any kind of freedom, and it continues its violations against these journalists. The Israeli occupation does not differentiate between a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian journalist. The non-Palestinian journalist tries to document the events as they are, so the Israeli occupation relentlessly targets them and any other journalist who tries to document events on the ground without discrimination. The Palestinian journalist works in an area rich with events. There are incursions and airstrikes all the time. And as a journalist tries to cover these crimes, he will be a target to the Israeli occupation. The Israeli occupation does not want the journalist to succeed in covering these violations, because any footage that comes out of the Gaza Strip exposes the Israeli occupation's army. That is why, in the beginning of any incursion, they fire and attack journalists to get them away from the action zone so they cannot document these incursions or any targeting of civilians. Therefore, if they injure the journalist, he would be taken to the hospital and there will be no one to document the events, so the occupation army can do whatever they want. If journalists were there, this means there were witnesses on the crime. There are no witnesses on the crime as long as there are no journalists. Palestinian journalists have been subject to a variety of violations that reach the killing in cold blood. Other violations include arrest and detention for extended periods, especially the administrative detention with no accusation, as well as confiscation of their media coverage badges, especially in the West Bank. Journalists face continuous violations similar to the case during their coverage of the war on Gaza or the usual occupation's incursions to the Palestinian areas. Many of them were injured while covering the events, and some of these injured journalists lost their ability to perform their job.
Assassination of journalists in general is part of the repulsive occupation, because Palestinian journalists actually like the job, which unveils the ugly face of the occupation, and have determination and persistence. The Israeli occupation just assassinates them. They kill them to kill the truth. This is how the occupation envisions killing and assassinating them.
During the attack on Jabalia, there was an incursion in Azbat Abu Rabbo right behind us. We were covering the incursion on the first and second day. It seems that the Israeli occupation army did not like our movement in the area. So they fired at us multiple times, but we continued documenting this crime. I was standing right here when the tanks advanced a little further. They saw me, and right away one of the tanks fired a shell directly towards me. After I was taken to the hospital, I was surprised that the shell also hit other people and they were killed. When I woke up and became conscious, I realized that my best friend and the rest of the team were also injured. After that, we went back to the field and continued working. These violations and targeting of journalists are not going to stop us from doing our work. By the way, this building we are in right now was hit and targeted by the Israeli occupation during the war on the Gaza Strip. Other colleagues were on the roof of this building and were targeted as well while covering the events. However, none of us, the journalists, our colleagues who were targeted, their families, or even the Palestinian Authority took judicial action. So there is weakness or failure in this side. We have to encourage families of victims, civil society organizations, the journalist syndicate, and the Palestinian Authority to take judiciary action against the Israeli occupation's war criminals. These Israeli war criminals should not remain unpunished. We can generally say that these violations frequently committed by the Israeli occupation against Palestinian journalists are evidence that it tries to cover the truth and isolate Palestine from its surrounding. The occupation isolated the Gaza Strip through the siege and isolates the West Bank from time to time. Despite all these hardships, Palestinian journalists played their role in delivering the message and suffering of Palestinian people, as well as documenting the violations that exposed the Israeli occupation. Therefore, the camera was able to expose the organized terrorism, war crimes, and crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli occupation. Claims were filed on the issue of targeting journalists, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association, but procrastination has always prevailed in these cases. There were also claims by local and international organizations, but these also were put aside, especially the ones regarding Al-Aqsa Association. The justification given most of the time, among others, was that a counterclaim of the one presented is filed. This is evidence that there are restrictions on journalists and their claims, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association. The Israeli occupation is a renegade state practicing state terrorism according to the international humanitarian law. However, the balance of powers with the United States hegemony blocks any attempts to sue the Israeli occupation in the United Nations, especially in the Security Council. Using Article 7 of the international law would force the Israeli occupation to subdue and abide to the international conventions and the international humanitarian law. When the issue on the table concerns an Arab country or so, the United Nations decisions are enforced immediately, and forces like UNIFIL would deploy to employ decisions of the Security Council. In the Palestinian case, everything is pending and no serious sanctions were enforced to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing more crimes against Palestinians, and this provides a shield for the occupation to carry on.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, we need to abstain from more than just food and water in the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is an honor to be here at your service. The holy month of Ramadan, what a beautiful month indeed. A difficult month, trials, tribulations, hunger, thirst in the holy month of Ramadan. But it is difficult, you know, where we don't eat, we don't drink. We kind of break ourselves from this materialistically imposed, you know, schedule and routine that we have. We break out of it and we're trying to go into a more, you know, spiritually oriented schedule and lifestyle. So, of course, it is going to be a little bit difficult, but, you know, we have to hang in there and be strong, and we'll be able to get through it, and we'll be a much better person, inshallah, by the end of the holy month of Ramadan. So we're talking about how we need to abstain from a little bit more than just food and water. Now, of course, the most basic elements and the basic necessities of a human being is food and water. I mean, can there be anything more basic than food and water in a human being's life? So, but despite it being basic, it is also very fundamental. I mean, if you don't eat or drink, you know, for a prolonged period of time, you most probably will die, right? I mean, I think that's the scientific consensus. So when we're talking about not eating and drinking, yes, this is a very big deal. You know, it is a basic thing. And when you realize that you are able to overcome such a basic and fundamental physical aspect of yourself, you know, then you realize that you can probably overcome a lot of other physical, you know, barriers or obstacles that are created because you have the power to be able to overcome such basic and fundamental aspects of your physical self that you will be able to, you know, overcome other ones as well.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how we need to refrain and protect ourselves from things that are more than just food and water. So food and water, of course, being a basic necessity, is something that we need to, refrain from in the holy month of Ramadan. And there are certain other jurisprudentially forbidden things, you know, that can break our fast that we also need to stay away from in the holy month of Ramadan. But it's not just limited to this, right? When we go towards the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, we find that they emphasize the fact that merely, you know, refraining from food and water is not going to cut it, especially when, you know, we indulge, unfortunately, or we commit sins. So, you know, for example, God forbid, we lie, we backbite, we cheat, we steal, we rob, you know, I don't know, we slander. For example, we look at things that are prohibited, or we listen to things that are prohibited, or we say things that are prohibited, right? These things, they might not jurisprudentially break our fast, but we need to stay away from them because, one, they defeat the purpose of fasting, which is self-purification, and these things, they, you know, they corrupt us, they taint us, they kind of stain us. You know, because they're sins, and that's what sins do. They taint and they corrupt, you know, and they are a blotch upon one's self. So, yes, not eating and drinking is a basic thing that we need to do, but we also need to refrain from committing many of these other sins that really, you know, don't help us to attain self-purification in the holy month of Ramadan.
Thank you.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Expose. Tonight on Expose, Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu turn up the heat in their staged public feud over Zionist Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, as Netanyahu vows to defy any call for canceling the Rafah invasion. Now, leftist politicians and media figures go into a complete social media meltdown after former President Donald Trump said there would be a bloodbath if he is not elected in November. And finally, a Politico Ipsos new poll shows that half of the country in the United States of America believes Trump is a guilty man and should go to trial before the 2024 presidential election. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to defy U.S. President Joe Biden's warning not to launch a major military invasion in Rafah, which houses millions of Palestinian displaced civilians. But is Joe Biden even warning him for real, or is it just part of a useless charade for electoral purposes? Let us hear from Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert in fake news expose. All what we heard last week on Western broadcast media was that U.S. President Joe Biden is deeply concerned about the prospect of Israeli entity Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordering a major ground operation in Gaza's southern city of Rafah. And we were supposed to take those concerns for real, just like we were supposed to believe that this was not staged. Fuad, was this something really that we were not supposed to hear coming out of Biden after his State of the Union address?
Definitely. I guess we're supposed to believe that this was a totally unplanned hot mic moment by U.S. President Joe Biden. And we're supposed to believe that Biden is suddenly extremely frustrated with the genocidal war that Netanyahu is waging. I'm not sure what he thinks he's trying to prove. I mean, seems like he wants to have a heart-to-heart with Bibi about the genocide that's being waged with the weapons that he's sending from his own administration. The public isn't stupid, though, and they see this for what it really is, which is an attempt to garner political support, and it's electoral propaganda, essentially. His actions are nowhere near his words. In an interview with Jonathan Capehart on MSNBC, Biden was asked about this hot mic moment. Mm-hmm. He said, let's take a look.
You were caught on a hot mic after your State of the Union address talking to Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Senator Michael Bennett saying, quote, I told him, Bibi, and don't repeat this, but you and I are going to have a come to Jesus meeting. What do you mean by that?
What I meant was, it's an expression used in the southern part of my state, meaning a serious meeting. And it was, I've known Bibi for 50 years, and he knew what I meant by it.
So what's the come to Jesus part? What tough love are you going to give to the prime minister?
What's happening is he has a right to defend Israel, a right to continue to pursue Hamas. But he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions taken. He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake.
As you can see, Marwa, Biden's plan is to sit Netanyahu down and have a strict talk with him about how the U.S.-sponsored genocide in Gaza is actually starting to counter Zionist interests and that he should be more careful to stop killing innocents.
Oh, my God.
This is not only an election charade, but it's also a naive take on the slaughter that's taking place in Gaza. And honestly, it's an insult to the over 35,000 Palestinians who have been killed and the over 60,000 who have been injured. So nothing will stop Netanyahu except the U.S. demanding a ceasefire at the mm-hmm. UNSC. Mm-hmm. Not just saying a ceasefire is a good idea, but mm-hmm. actually demanding one.
And they actually passed one on Monday afternoon, and it was without the U.S. even
exactly.
voting with a veto.
Abstention.
And yet, the Israelis continued with the massacres.
Biden was even asked by MSNBC if he had any red lines for the Zionists who plan on invading Rafah, which is a desperately overcrowded city that's filled with displaced, over 1.2 million displaced Palestinian civilians. And his answer, Marwa, perfectly demonstrates why Benjamin Netanyahu will not listen to anything that the Biden administration has to say,
mm-hmm.
whether it's real or whether it's electoral propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a look.
Let's hear that.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have, but there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal, to get to deal with the trauma caused by Hamas.
So there is no red line for Israel, is there?
It doesn't seem so. It's outrageous that Western media is actually spouting this stuff. Biden repeats that he will never stop sending arms and funds to the Zionists. He says Rafah is a red line, and then 3 seconds later, he says there are no red lines. So what is it that's finally going to end this genocidal war? Because it's certainly not a come-to-Jesus meeting,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is that he said. Netanyahu watched the same interview that we all watched,
mm-hmm.
and he saw it as a carte blanche to continue his genocide and to continue butchering Palestinians and decimating what's left of Rafah in the hopes that Egypt is going to take in all these displaced civilians. In an interview with Fox News, knowing that there's going to be zero accountability, Netanyahu refused to bow down to international pressure and vowed to move forward with the invasion of Rafah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do it while we enable the civilian population in Rafah to leave, as we've done up to now, but we have to finish the job.
Netanyahu knows that Biden is using the Rafah invasion red line for electoral purposes,
mm-hmm.
and he basically claps back at Biden and says that he has the support of the Israeli people in doing so. This is what happens when you say you'll never cut off weapons to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Netanyahu is now openly defying Biden and the rest of the international community, not just with Rafah. So in an interview with Politico, he openly states, "We do not want a Palestinian state." And this comes right after his carte blanche from the U.S. president.
Mm-hmm.
Politico also reported recently, citing U.S. officials, that Washington has already accepted limited operations in Rafah,
mm-hmm.
once again proving that there are no red lines and the Zionists can do what they
And audaciously
play.
Say that they abstain from vetoing the so-called ceasefire, the temporary ceasefire in the UNSC. This is such a charade happening
exactly.
at the moment.
Exactly.
Well, I completely understand where the people come from when they say they no longer trust Biden and they no longer want to vote for him because his words are not where his actions are.
No worries.
But at the end of the day, thank you very much for letting us know what has been happening in the broadcast media, especially in the West End Zionist media concerning this very pressing issue. Thanks a million. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to digital mainstream media. So the result of U.S. President Joe Biden's weak foreign policy towards Zionist Israel has led to the Zionist Israeli Prime Minister to overtly show complete defiance when it comes to invading Rafah, stopping the genocide, or simply allowing food aid and medical supplies into the largest concentration camp on earth, known